By the time she was 8, Syrinx was the best swimmer out of all her siblings, her long spidery limbs giving her an unbeatable advantage over the others in the water. The group of children she led spent most of their time playing around the streams and lakes in the valley, either swimming or building rafts and canoes. This was around the time they discovered how to fox Romulus's constant surveillance, misusing affinity to generate loitering phantasms in the sensor cells, which covered every exposed polyp surface. When they were 9 years old, she challenged her brother Thetis to an evasion race as a way of testing their newfound powers. Both teams of children set off on their precarious rafts, gliding down the stream out of the valley. Syrinx and her juvenile cohorts made it all the way down to the big saltwater reservoir which ringed the base of the southern end cape. That was where their punts became useless in the 100-meter depth, and so there they drifted in happy conspiracy until the axial light tube dimmed before responding to the increasingly frantic affinity calls from their parents. "You shouldn't have done it," Inone chided solemnly that evening. "You didn't have any life jackets." "But it was fun, and we had a real zing of a ride back in the hydro department officer's boat. It was so fast, there was spray and wind and everything." "I'm going to speak to Romulus about your moral responsibility traits. I don't think they integrated properly. Athene and Sinon were very worried, you know." "You knew I was all right, so Mother must have known as well." "There is such a thing as propriety." "I know. I'm sorry, really. I'll be nice to Mother and Father tomorrow. Promise." She rolled over onto her back, pulling the duvet a little tighter. The ceiling was transparent, and she could just make out the dim, silverish moon glow of the habitat's light tube through the clouds. "I imagined it was you I was riding on, not just a stupid raft."
"Did you?"
"Yes." There was that unique flash of oneness as their thoughts kissed at every level of consciousness.
"You're just trying to gain my sympathy," Inone accused.
"Course I am. That's what makes me me. Am I really horrible, do you think?"
"I think I will be glad when you're older and more responsible."
"I'm sorry. No more raft rides, honest," she giggled. "It was still heaps of fun, though."
Sinon died when the children were 11. He was 168. Syrinx cried for days, even though he had done his best to prepare the children. "I'll always remain with you," he told the dejected group when they gathered round his bed. Syrinx and Pomona had picked fresh angel trumpets from the garden to be put into vases beside the bed. "We have continuity, us Edenists. I'll be a part of the habitat personality. I'll see what you're all up to, and we can talk whenever you want. So don't be sad, and don't be frightened. Death isn't something to be afraid of, not for us."
"And I want you to grow up and start your captaincy," he told Syrinx privately. "You're going to be the best captain ever, sly minx, you see."
He gave him a tentative smile and then hugged his frail form, feeling the hot, sweaty skin, and hearing in her mind his inner wince as he shifted his position. That night she and Inone listened to his memories as they fled his decaying brain, a bewildering discharge of images and smells and emotional triggers. That was when she first found out about the nagging worry he held about Inone, the tiny shred of doubt which persisted about the Voidhawk's unusual co-parent, his concern hanging in the darkened bedroom like one of the phantasms she bamboozled the habitat receptor cells with.
"See, Sliminx? I told you I'd never desert you. Not you."
She smiled into the empty air as his distinctive mental tone sounded in her head. Nobody else ever called her that, only Daddy. There was a curious background burble as if a thousand people were all holding whispered conversations somewhere far behind him. But the next morning, the sight of his body wrapped in a white shroud being carried out of the house to be buried in the habitat's arbor was too much for her, and the tears began.
"How long will he live for in the habitat multiplicity?" she asked Athene after a short burial ceremony.
"As long as he wants," Athene said slowly. She never lied to any of the children, but there were times when she wished she wasn't so damn noble.